Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
What they are going to have to write off is nothing compared to the enormous financial benefits to those very same companies by health insurance reform. It will bring down their costs substantially.
This is Marty Goldenson sitting in for Brian Lehrer. And that was President Obama's senior advisor, Valerie Jarrett, in an interview yesterday on ABC's This Week, kicking off what promises to be a spirited debate on how health care reform is received by corporations and the American people. This week starts off Congress's Easter recess, which means that people who voted for health care and against health care are heading home to face their own constituents. It also means that there is breathing room for other business, including what is basically an overnight trip, a presidential visit to Afghanistan. Joining us is Michael Scherer, Time's White House correspondent, Time Magazine, who just touched down from Afghanistan with President Obama, and he is here to talk about his trip as well as the weekend in politics and all things D.C. Michael, welcome to WNYC. Are you awake?
I am. 4 or 5 hours last night on the second leg of our, I think it was a 14 or 15-hour plane ride back. But I'm happy to be here, Marty.
Oh, good. On the way out, you were in Air Force One?
Yes, that's right. There was only one plane. A lot of presidential trips will have a charter flight, but this one was conducted in such secrecy that there were about 14 members of the media who were invited to come along, and we have a little cabin, which is essentially in steerage in the back of the president's plane.
So you don't get a bed like the president?
No, we don't get a bed. The seat is slightly better than coach, but not quite as nice as a nice seat on a new commercial airliner. Air Force One hasn't really been redecorated in a couple decades, I think.
Right. So what'd you learn on this trip?
There were a couple things. You know, one was there still remains some tension, even though both sides are looking at or trying to focus on the progress between Hamid Karzai and the U.S. If you remember, back in November, the top civilian diplomat in Afghanistan had written a cable back to Washington, which was then leaked to the media, that said that Karzai was not an adequate strategic partner and had pointed to corruption in his government, the lack of his own focus on actually creating a government that could govern the entire nation of Afghanistan, and a number of other issues. And after Karzai was reelected in a highly contentious and disputed and in some ways dubious election, Obama was forced to sort of double down on an imperfect partner, and we saw some of that same tension. You know, Obama's aides made it clear on the plane ride over that there were a number of asks that the president was still making of Karzai,
which is to say, less corruption, get more done on the ground, so people don't want to identify or go to an insurgency in order to solve simple on-the-ground problems like living.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, and the big theme there is that, you know, the entire U.S. strategy right now depends on the Afghan people having confidence in their government, and right now, for the most part, they don't. And it's because the government's corrupt, it's because people are appointed to that government for reasons that have less to do with their ability to govern than, you know, their relationship to various other players in the Afghan hierarchy, and those are the areas where they're trying to push forward. The president had a secure video teleconference with Karzai on the 15th of March.
Yeah, but let me interrupt you for 1 second. Yeah. I was going to ask you about that. He can do all the teleconferences that he wants. He doesn't really have to go to Afghanistan to put pressure on, or one might argue, to prop up Karzai, or does he? What's your feeling about the purpose of this trip?
Well, that's one half of the purpose. I think the main purpose of this trip, I mean, maybe one of three purposes. First is to actually meet face to face with Karzai. Karzai is now going to be coming to Washington in May, and they'll meet face to face again. The second was to meet with the troops and say thank you to the troops, which is something Obama has wanted to do. But the third is sort of, you know, even from a higher altitude, this is Obama's war, and Obama has committed an enormous amount of new resources, you know, more than 50,000 more troops last year. He's really doubled down on a very explosive strategy, and he had yet to go to the country as president. He went once in 2008 when he was running for president. And this has been something that the White House has wanted to do for a long time, definitely since the December speech in which Obama announced the results of his second review of Afghan policy.
Right. It's been postponed a couple times for weather or other things, right?
Right, and it was only because the healthcare debate went long and because the Indonesia trip, which we were supposed to go on a couple weeks ago, was canceled, that Obama was able to make this trip. But I think the short answer to that, why did he fly, for 30-some hours, or maybe it was 29 hours to be on the ground, 6 hours in darkness on the other side of the world? And the answer is he really wants to, put his full support behind the Afghan effort, and it's difficult for him to do that without ever having touched down in the country. He also met with the generals, he met with who are in charge of the effort there. He met with the cabinet, Karzai's cabinet, and he met with troops.
And it's never bad for a president to reestablish himself in a sort of bipartisan way, which is, of course, Obama's dream.
Right.
Internationally, I mean, who can be against your thanking the troops, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there are people who have concerns about U.S. strategy in Afghanistan, but no one would be against thanking the troops.
Before we move on to other D.C. questions, where did this bomber jacket come from? He just looked very presidential, but military-like that way.
Yeah, I think they get them. I think all presidents get them. Sometimes they're in green, sometimes they're brown leather, like the one he wore. It was interesting. We landed in Bagram Air Base, which is about 50 miles north of Kabul, and we had to take helicopters into the presidential palace. It was an exciting ride because these are heavily armed helicopters ready for trouble. And when he got off the helicopter, we landed in the palace and in sort of clouds of dust. If you look at some of the pictures that have run since then of him walking with Karzai to the honor guard ceremony, there's dust and dirt all over his jacket. So by the time he changed into the bomber jacket, he needed a change of clothes.
You're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC Radio. I'm Marty Goldenson filling in for Brian. And we're talking about the weekend with Michael Scherer and what's coming up. Michael is Time Magazine's White House correspondent. So what else is President Obama going to be cramming into this moment of legislative calm over the Easter holidays?
The next big push, which he's going to be preparing for, is financial regulatory reform. We're very quickly running out of time in a midterm election year to get anything done in Congress.
This came out of the Senate committee this morning, right? It's going to go to the full Senate?
It came out early last week. It came out of the Senate committee, but it was a very abbreviated process. Democrats expected Republicans to offer hundreds of amendments. Republicans, in the end, at the last minute, declined to do so, mm-hmm. which I think was a strategic move on the part of Republicans. They think they'll have a better shot of mucking this thing up on the floor of the Senate, in front of the whole Senate. So there's still a long way to go for this, and there's challenges to it both on the left and the right, what Chris Dodd's committee bill is right now. And the White House has really been looking forward to this fight all year. They were hoping to get health care done, if you remember, back in January, early February.
Yeah, or was that 2 years ago? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, back in January, but it took an extra couple months, and they wanted at the beginning of the year to pivot right to financial regulatory reform because they wanted to use it as sort of a electoral cudgel against Republicans. They're hoping they can sort of take on a populist voice and cast the Republican Party as obstructionists who are on the side of Wall Street.
Do you think they have any momentum coming out of this victory in terms of getting the financial reform through, or did it squeak through so narrowly that basically they're back in irons?
No, I think they do have momentum. I mean, the alternative, if financial reform had not gone forward, they would be stuck at a dead standstill, and it would be very hard to see a way forward on.
You mean if healthcare hadn't gone through?
Yeah, that's what I mean. If healthcare hadn't gone through, and we had last week Bob Corker, who's been negotiating with Chris Dodd, he's a senator from Tennessee, announcing that he thought his Republican colleagues were making a mistake in not supporting some sort of a bill and not working closer with Republicans, so that it showed some dissension already in the ranks. And I think, depending on how this bill is written in the end, it'll be a very hard vote for a number of Republican members, senators. I mean, clearly the Republican leadership wants to deny Democrats any victory. And
yeah, but this is a tough one because this is, about financial reform, and that's the issue where the Tea Party comes from, and it's
that's
a tough one to be against right now, I think.
That's right.
Any teeth left in it? I know that the you know, the consumer protection wing of it has been put into the Federal Reserve, which makes it a little have a little less teeth. Although it's got what a presidential appointee will lead it, right?
Right. Yeah. The it's interesting. The Consumer Financial Protection Agency, which is going to be a new body, whether it's inside another body or not, that aims at creating basically regulating how financial companies communicate with their consumers to prevent some of the abuses we saw that led to this collapse, gets a lot of headlines because it's the one part of this that people can kind of understand. They don't want to have to sign loan papers that are, 300 pages long and that no one can understand. They want to sign something simple. The same with they want to get credit card statements that are simple.
Right.
But the big parts of this bill are in other areas, and there is still a lot of haggling. I don't think we yet know exactly how it's going to shake out.
Let me jump ahead. President Obama also used this weekend to push through 15 recess appointments. I thought it was a deja vu. I thought I was seeing a Bush headline. Nominations that were stalled in the Senate awaiting confirmation. Have you gotten a chance to look at the list of names that were pushed through? Are there any big names we should know about on that list?
I honestly was preparing for a secret departure to Afghanistan when this came out, but so I haven't looked closely at the names. I think most of them are non-controversial, and the actual move is not very surprising. The White House began preparing the ground for this in January and February by sort of daily messagings on their blog and from the.
So you think this would have been done even regardless of the sort of positive victory week that we saw last week?
Yeah, I think the recess appointments have to be done in a recess, and this was the first recess where there was clearly an opportunity to do it this year, and they had prepared the ground for it. I think it would have been surprising otherwise. Even if healthcare had not gone forward, the White House argument that Republicans are obstructing anything and so we have to get something done still probably would have worked. Everybody, it's one of these things in Washington that makes it annoying to cover is that whenever one of the parties comes into power, they're outraged at the abuses of the minority party. And this is very much a replay of what we've seen. And there's a trend that things are getting worse and worse and that the minority party is working less cooperatively with the majority party and obstructing things where they can obstruct them. And appointments are one of those areas.
Back to health care for a second. Any idea how the Democrats at home will defend health care? Is it going to be like, the August town hall meetings? And how's it going to be different from those? Because those were disastrous.
Right. Well, the big difference is that the suspense is gone now. I mean, the I think Democrats are hoping that because this is already a done deal, it's already law, there won't be the same emotional fury behind it. Secondly, Democrats have been saying for quite a while that they can't wait for this to pass because then people will see what's really here. I mean, a lot of that debate in August of last year at the town halls concerned things that weren't really in the bill or were pretty gross distortions of what was in the bill. And there are lots of legitimate reasons to be upset with this bill, but death panels was never one of them. And so Democrats are hoping not just this next couple weeks, but as we go into the midterm election year, they can successfully communicate a new
spin maybe on this thing.
Yeah, a new spin, but a new storyline. I mean, spin is one way of saying storyline. But so that it's not about the scary things that are probably not going to happen, and it's more about what will happen. You know, the other big issue that in the end, this vote on healthcare for Democrats became not even that much about healthcare. It was just about governance. Were they able, as a party, when they had huge majorities in the Senate and the House, or historically huge majorities in the Senate and the House, and the President of the United States, to get something done? And so much of the debate over the last 2 months has been about process, about how are we going to use this bill or that bill, or who's getting what special deal where, whose arm's being twisted? Is this right? Is this wrong? Are various lobbies getting paid off, out the back door? And Democrats are really hoping that now that the vote has been cast, the process closes as an issue, and we can, and as a nation, begin to look more closely at what's actually in this bill in substance and policy.
I had an idea for how the president should sell this or the people should sell this. In the satyrs that people are going to tonight, there's a section called Dayenu, where you're grateful. Dayenu means enough. That would have been enough.
Right.
And one could say, had the healthcare bill only made it possible to get insured despite previous conditions, Dayenu.
Yes. The president's actually hosting a Seder tonight, I think, at the White House.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll try that. I don't know if that'll be central to their messaging this week, but
yeah, it should
come
be.
Up.
Politically, we're hearing a lot from the right about poisoning the well and how the Republicans won't assist on any Democratic initiative now that they pushed health care through. How much stock do you put in that? Was there going to be cooperation, do you think, otherwise?
Well, you know, you can argue that on a lot of areas there wasn't much cooperation already, and that there was a sort of stated and declared implicit strategy that was pulled together in spring of 2009 to, just prevent legislative victories for the Democrats by the Republicans. So that strategy doesn't change because of this victory. I think there were the claims being made by Lindsey Graham and John McCain that, you know, if you pass health care reform through these processes, then everything's, you know, going to be ruined for the rest of Congress. Those were overstatements. I mean, what Graham was talking about was immigration reform, which was always a huge long shot in this year, given unemployment and given the difficult politics around immigration and the midterm elections. The other area where Republicans have threatened, some delay is on an energy bill or a climate change bill, and that was always in doubt. I don't think the health care vote really changes that. And, you know, there are other reasons that it may be worth waiting, you know, another year to really put something like that on the floor. And the issue of financial regulatory reform, which we already discussed, is pretty much unchanged. I mean, the American people are able to separate financial regulatory reform from health care reform, and you know, the anger at the Wall Street banks and the financial collapse is enormous in this country, and that's not, you know, politicians in Washington know that.
So the Senate's on this 2-week break. What did they leave on the table? Isn't the jobs bill just sitting there, the extension?
Right.
This
is another one of those, political process stories. Here's a bill that, you know, the Democrats decided very early on this year that because Americans were very concerned about, the biggest concern was about the economy, that they would split up into little pieces, lots of little jobs bills. And so, you know, you're going to have a jobs bill for small businesses. You have a jobs bill for unemployment extensions, COBRA extensions, things like that. This is one piece of that. It's for extending benefits that basically everybody in both parties agrees the American people should get because they're the kind of government spending that is smart during a recession. The issue is whether the Senate should pass this spending without having a way to pay for it. Essentially, right now, Democrats are trying to pass these bills, and the money will just come out of the deficit, which is, you know, actually pretty standard for the way Washington has been working
in recent years. Right. That was the one-man filibuster was, you know, Bunning's filibuster was about,
right, no,
not against it, but about how do we pay for it, right?
Right, we're back. It's Bunning Redux with a slightly more genial guy in the front. Tom Coburn from Oklahoma is taking the lead on this, and both parties at this point see it as politically advantageous to draw this out. It's an odd political calculus. For the Democrats, they get to cast Republicans as obstructionists who don't care about the little guy who's out of work and needs help. For Republicans, they get to hammer this deficit message. You know, Democrats are pre-spending, fiscally irresponsible. And so rather than resolve this before the recess, they decided to go home with the issue. And so both parties will be, you know, crowing about this for the next couple weeks. And then once they return, it'll be resolved in some way.
You're remarkably coherent for a man who's been on an airplane for 26 hours, Michael Scherer.
I take that as a compliment.
Yeah.
It was a long trip. Although, there was a sleeping pill involved.
Yes. Michael Scherer is Times White House correspondent. Thanks for joining us. Go get some sleep.
Okay. Thank you very much.
This is Marty Goldenson filling in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC Radio. Coming up next, Albany budgets, all you need to know.